spotted was that it was missing a piece of information that we are very much going to rely on, which was the identity of the source of the event in the API. There was no way in the API to, so that would need to be updated when they started to talk to the XNF proxy to store the data, because we're looking at storing the native data and not a whole network view.
Right.
So that was what the conversation went on yesterday. But so we didn't actually get to see Krishna's enough of Krishna's presentation. So hopefully he comes in today.
Yeah. Swami, do you know if Krishna will join us from last time he was presenting and we were going to continue that
Yeah, he
conversation?
said he would. Yeah, he said he would join, Ben, maybe after some time. I'll just check with him offline.
Okay, great. Okay. Okay, so I've started the recording. Welcome everybody to the last CPS meeting of the year on December 18th. And we will kick off the meeting with an update from development project status. If Neve or Rishi wants to give us an update, you want to share?
Sure. I'll just share my screen. Can I have access to share, please?
I don't know if Tuan managed to
Yep.
get around to testing his hosting rights yet.
Yeah, we have to work that out too. Maybe next meeting.
In the new year.
Yeah, I don't have access to share.
Oh, I thought I just gave you access. Oops. Okay, let
I'm
me try
sorry.
again. Try again.
Okay.
Co-host now.
Okay. Yeah, so just to give you guys an update of what we've been working on. So here is all the changes that have been merged from starting here from last week. So remove deprecated code and classes. I've been working on this just to remove methods and classes we don't use anymore. Rustan has been working on this change, Yarn resource name persistence. So basically, this was a subtask of introducing the schema sets to be able to create a schema set. So the young parser enforced that we need to have a name when converting a source to schema. So we worked on that. Claudio was working on introduce Yarn text schema source set. So this is an interface that will be responsible to provide information on the Yarn schema to the model. Aditya was working on some sonar fixes and adding Spring Spock testing. So we had some issues with mocking MVC, Spring MVC to test the REST controller. So she did some changes. Then Claudio was working on the style module references. So yeah, this is just listing the module references and you have to provide the data space and set name and you get the namespace and revision back. You also worked
Is
on
that one or a list? So does that include the referenced modules,
Yeah.
augmented modules and extension modules and stuff like that?
I'm not sure if they looked at augmented modules and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's later, all right, yeah. But whatever the Yang parser has, it gives you back that list. Okay, cool.
Decouple Yang utils test. So Claudio worked on this. Yeah, it also involved just so removing dissociating the test from the Yang utils class to the Yang text schema source test and removing deprecated methods from that class. Ruslan worked on enable tests using test containers on Jenkins. So this is just a configuration change. And Aditya was working on and merged the change for splitting the controller. So originally we just had one REST controller, but we decided to follow the pattern we decided on for API and SPI and split it into an admin and data controller. So admin will handle CPS responsibilities, and the data controller will be for Yang, handling Yang specific data. I added this logging example. So we decided to use a Lombok annotation for our logging. So that was just a small example of that. Ruslan merges change for associating the anchor with a schema set. So this is just involves creating the anchor and returning a name. And also we merged the redirecting logs to the console, as we discussed last week. We still have two reviews open, so create schema set, REST API and service level. And also Claudio is just still has a review open for adding his tests for the get module references. So if I go to our Kanban board, I probably should have mentioned at the start, we have no bugs. Bruno, he is on annual leave now, but he has been working on ensuring the SPI is compatible with Temporal DB. And today, Ruslan picked up the story to create data space. And he is also working on sharing container-based persistent testing knowledge with the team. Tuan is on annual leave now, but he has been working on a spike to study use case requirements for end-to-end network slicing. So he's just looking at the slicing use case and looking into particular files and what is required for example API methods.
Thanks, Niamh.
Any comments or questions from anybody about the development stuff? Is there also any issue with like the documentation? Should we start? Have we thought about that at all? Maybe we need to start working on that.
Above and beyond the API, is it?
Yeah. And I mean the actual like read the docs type documentation.
You know so I mean? how to configure and deploy? I guess, Niamh, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys haven't really started figuring out how to productify the deployment. I mean, you do have in the backlog that you're going to need to talk to OOM and such like, but you're still not at the point where you're doing that yet. You're still only test deploying it.
Yeah, we haven't looked into that yet.
Yeah, so you're still making it work. Yeah, I guess it's Ben is right. It's important not to forget it because otherwise it's a bit of a scramble at the end.
Yeah. Let me see. I don't know if... I wonder if I'm having problems accessing it. Let me see if I can find... Okay. So let me share my screen again. So this is the current read there. Let me put it in the chat here. Where's the chat? So this is the current read the docs where all the projects are expected to document stuff. And let me see.
Yeah, we'd have a mention under the ONAP architecture for sure. Yeah
so I think first you go and click on like the release. Yeah, so like the latest or whatever. And then every repository has RST files, which, maybe it might be better to take a look at a component first. So, you know, we're gonna have to have documentation kind of like this, basically that describes your APIs or whatever and guides and just essentially what we have on our project page, we have to translate over into a read the doc page. So that's the basic.
You gave this a go previously, didn't you?
Yeah. I have some, actually I have, I have notes at some point. I should probably, I can go over with you guys. Maybe we don't need to do it here, but or right now, but I do have notes on how to access the read the doc stuff. Let me see if
I think since they did that, they actually it was that you had to use the integration project to do your read the docs.
Yeah, they've moved it now. Yeah, so basically you're absolutely right. So the use cases, all the documentation was originally in the integration project, but for a standalone project like CPS, you'll have your own, I don't know where I put the notes here, let me see. Let me see. Well, maybe I don't want to root around now to find it, but I
think that's the first time I've seen you resort to a search.
Yeah, because it's been a while. I put that together a long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
Shoot. Usually my directory structures are good enough that I don't need to do this.
Exactly. I mean, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
You're human after all.
I think this is here. Let me see. Yeah. Okay. So I did start actually the CPS read the docs in the integration project. But actually, if you look at a repository, like here, you'll notice that actually these are the actual repositories of stuff. So you'll have like, for example, in ANEI, you know, well, I don't know about necessarily all these projects, but essentially you're going to have you'll have RST files essentially within your repository somewhere. I mean, obviously not every project is going to be orchestrated or designed the same, but essentially you're going to have RST files, and those RST files essentially define what this looks like. And then they're essentially it's kind of like writing an HTML file essentially. So you have these files, and then I think we're going to basically just take what's in our project page, I assume, and make it into an RST file. We don't need to put it into the integration thing, but it does follow all the other, you know, you should have a Garrett review and so forth. And that's one of the main reasons why they're using this instead of the wiki, because, you know, purportedly it's version controlled and so forth and reviewed, and there's a lot more overhead. But anyway, that's what they do. And I think that's why also there's these different releases as well, because you when you push your changes in, you push them into a particular release. So in the master branch, the latest one is that latest release. So anyway, that's
I think that document has to reflect what's there though.
Of course. Yeah. So you want to structure it so it's showing what's in that particular release as well. So yeah, of course. Okay.
Documentation.
Yeah, that might be something we need to think about. So there's Tony and Tuan have also, and myself, have gotten emails from Catherine about the documentation as well. So
that kind of got kicked to touch, somehow managed. I don't think I finished it off. I think she got some update in the TSC.
Yeah.
Meeting, and then she was okay with the answer that I'd given at that stage, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, the point was is that at some point in the next release, we'll probably be tapped to say, "Hey, where are you with documentation?" But I see that also that Krishna has joined. Maybe we could continue the discussion from last time.
Yeah, that would be good.
Krishna, do you have? Do you have your slides from last time? Could you load it into this? Could you load it into this web website, this wiki page. Let me put the chat, put the link in the chat for you.
Yeah, sure, Ben.
If you just, if you go to here, that I just put in the chat, and then hit edit, and then scroll to the today's date or last week's date, and then you can just, I have a thing for the slides, just upload it there, and yeah. So I don't, yeah, go ahead.
It really is handy when you're coming back to reference stuff.
Yeah, and also I think people who missed, I know a number of people are on vacation or whatnot, and Tuan included, so they're going to want to listen to this recording and stuff, so and get the slides. So if you just upload the slides here, that would be good. So last time we didn't finish the presentation, started from Krishna, so we'll continue it here. Krishna, do you have your slides handy, ready?
Yes, Ben. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stop sharing.
Let me check with Swami once. Swami, did we make any updates to the slides, Swami?
No, Krishna, I didn't make any updates to the last version that you shared.
Yeah, okay, then I will share.
Yeah.
Okay, let me stop sharing.
And maybe while Krishna is bringing up the slides, I had one question for Tony. I was just reflecting back in terms of what you were saying, Tony, for the West messages, right? For the notifications, because you are saying that we need to find out if the West format or the layout contains the network function ID, right? Which we can reference back, because that's very important for accessing CPS.
Yeah, that was where we got to in the conversation when the meeting ended. With the XNF proxy and the CPS for the XNF proxy for the data that relates to the XNFs, it relates all data to specific XNF instances. And when we create an instance, an anchor to hold that data, we'll use an identifier that comes from ANAI. Because that is what we see as the master of the instance data. So when the event comes, it must somewhere specify the source. And that's what I think it was Camille who sent on some information where we were getting to this. I think it was the source ID, or there was some attribute in the VES header that was related, or that people thought was related to the identifier in ANAI. And that's the piece of information that was missing. And it was missing from the API in the config DB, but it will be present somehow in the XNF proxy API, because the X proxy will be storing data for specific XNF instances. So it needs to know which instance the event is coming from.
Yeah, Tony, that's a valid point, but I also have another observation. So there may be some situations where I may want to find the XNF ID for a given logical object. So for example, I have a cell. I know the PCI or the identity of the cell. I may have to query the CPS database to find out what is the associated network function or the DU that is associated with that particular cell.
Yep, and that's
how
that's
we manage to do that.
That's a query. That's a type of query that you're actually looking for the anchor based on a property of somewhere down in the tree. So I'm going to have to defer to Tuan on this one, because he's my level of understanding of exactly how the XPath would work for that. I understand that it's possible, Swami.
Yeah, no, the reason why I'm saying not only, maybe it's also linked to the point that you were making. So for example, even if the West notification does not contain the NF ID, right? For sure, it will contain the cell details. So for example, that West notification, if it's going to be consumed by, let's say, SDNR, it can do a query for that particular cell, what is the NF ID?
Yes, it could.
And then when it puts when it performs like the put or the patch operation, right? Then it could include that in the API call.
Exactly. I wouldn't want to put that kind of business logic as part of the responsibility of the XNF proxy, because it's teaching it too much about the relationship of a cell to a network function. It might not be, this is meant to cover, multiple different domains, not just radio domains. So the concept of a cell won't mean anything to a transport network.
So it will be an upstream component, not in the XNF proxy for sure.
But you're absolutely correct. It is an alternative way to resolve the identifier. Now, if it's in the VES event, and I think it should be, then that's probably the easiest way. But it is absolutely another way to do it.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So I have the, are you able to share, Krishna?
No, Ben. I'm not have the permission to share. I think
should
I just gave you the right, so you should be able to.
Yeah. No, I can share. This.
I see it.
Yeah. So you can see. Yeah.
Okay. So, like, I made a minor update to the slide, like when we discussed last week. So I added this thing. Like, I wanted to be sure also, like. So when we say it could be either target type or schema set, I think it really depends on the API too, right? Like the API that CPS exposes. So let's say if the CPA expects a target type for each query, then we should this should directly be a target type. So I think this field is also dependent on the way that CPS exposes the API. Like, will the query be, will the XPath query be specific to a particular target, or will it be for a generic schema set? So that we need to.
Well, see, for me, this is the interface with the XNF proxy, which sits just beside the CPS. So it's taking responsibility for the XNF data that's being persisted. So. What you will need to do is to be able to specify the target, and preferably the target instance using an identifier that comes from ANAI or is in the event. And then after that, the schema should be exactly the same as what you get from the network function. So it should be defined by the network function. Does that answer that question, Krishna? I'm not sure.
Yes.
I think. So it will relate to the API, but the API will be very much if it was a REST interface, then very early on, let's call it XNF proxy, and then you'd have a path parameter that would identify the network function instance, and then you would have beneath that the that REST conf almost type mechanism for drilling down, or in a CPS path to drill down to the fragment that you want to store or update.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's better. Your sound is much better now.
Yeah. Okay. So I think there was some problem with my mic. Now it's better, right?
Oh yeah, much. Thank you.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I had on this slide was, what exactly do you see as the responsibility for the mapper service?
So there could be some couple of responsibilities additional to this. Like, one is the template management, and like it should translate the template and then get the results. And also it should involve the,
okay,
the translation of the response also, I believe. Like,
okay.
So when the CPS or XNF proxy sends the response, it will be in a specific format. So it should translate that also into a generic format.
Okay. So in the slides that I had shared previously, this is the DES-like service.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah, and also, Tony, as we go forward, right, it may also be that there is one API call from, let's say, an upstream microservice, but which may have to be translated into multiple queries as we go to CPS. So then it will become then the responsibility of the mapper service. Obviously, it will get the queries from the template, but there should be a little bit of state information, right? Which it should handle, or it should be capable of doing.
Yeah, I would call that transient state. But yes, I get exactly what you're saying. It would be transient state. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so
not
then it
persistent
has to aggregate
state,
everything
yeah.
and then give it back. Yeah.
Completely understand that. I just you know, it's a very, very generic term, mapper service, and I wanted to understand what it fit into. So the slides that I had sent, it is the DES, when we talked about the data execution service, it's a similar concept, but in this case specific to the SAN use case with the view to becoming generic. I think that was the conversation we had at the time.
Yeah, Tony, and maybe going forward, we'll also document at least what we see as functionality, right? So that it becomes then clear also for people, and they can also share their views in terms of, let's say, adding more functionality to make it more useful.
Yeah, but it has to, to be practical, it really has to start as a SAN component. Yeah.
Maybe SAN and okay. And I think now we are talking about slicing as the first use case.
Yes.
But at least these two use cases should be able to support that.
Okay, now I'm getting a nice picture of where it lives in my head, which is good for me. I hope everybody else is in the same boat.
Okay. Okay then, like moving on to the next part, like in the DB itself, there could be two options for the schema. Like what we could have is, we can have the ID as the primary key, so that like the ID will be specific for a schema set. So let's say we have a schema set for schema set or target type for SAN use case. So get neighbor list will be always be working on that particular target type, so that the consumer need not know the target type. So he will directly use the ID and then they can get the query. Other option is that the consumer will explicitly send the target type to. So in that case, ID and target type will be together be a composite key in that case.
I would prefer to be consistent to always specify the composite key. I hear what you're saying. It is an optimization whereby if an ID is only applicable to a single target type, then it is a shortcut and an optimization to not specify it. But as you get more versions, things will deviate in subtle ways. And so I think you're actually safer to always specify the composite key. Network elements, network functions have a history of not behaving well with respect to maintaining backward compatibility with their models. And I don't expect anything is going to change that in the short term, sadly. So it just to be safe, I would go for the composite key.
Okay. Yeah, I think then the consumer should at least know the target type that it is acting on. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe here Tony, at least I'm just thinking aloud here for the short term. Maybe as part of the mapper service, we could also have some kind of a default target type. So for example, if we are only operating with, let's say, one kind of network functions, right? Maybe a generic standard compliant, not any vendor specific things. It could be, probably by default filled by the mapper service if it didn't receive anything in the API call towards it.
Again, that Swami is an optimization. I don't object to it. I see why you want to do that, but I know that as you head into a heterogeneous multi-vendor environment, that the composite key will become very important and the default will be not very default. But yes, in the short term, to just make your life a little bit easier, a tiny bit easier, then yes, you could probably take that cut.
Okay, I'm thinking from the point of view of if the number of consumers are many, right? So if we can avoid this impact, at least for the short term, I think that would be good. So that's where I'm coming from, basically.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from. And, you know, there's always a trade-off in these things, Swami. Sometimes it's good to get people started on the right track. Okay. And sometimes that's just a pain in the backside and you shouldn't do it. There is always a balance between these things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I made some couple of slides for the API definition because I had two options, like this was the older one, which I assume that only ID will be there. So now we have schema set also. So the consumer will have to send the, this is a placeholder. We can like whatever the third column is, we will have it here. Either it's a target or a schema, whatever. So this should be in, the consumer should send this in addition to the actual template. Yeah.
It just helps the XNF proxy identify what specific anchor it's working on. If it's updating or querying a specific instance, it needs that. And the template is for the target type. So the target type could be inferred from the target instance. So we could figure that out, or the mapper service could figure that out. But it depends on whether it's easier for the applications that are using the mapper service if they have the target type available or if they have the target instance identifier available.
I think we may have to look at the way that we used to do the things. Like maybe we can take an example with the existing API. So if we take this first API, like the consumer doesn't have any idea about what the target is, like what the PNF or XNF it is acting upon.
So they don't know which PNF they're talking about. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe what we could do is like, so previously when we had ConfigDB, like ConfigDB will store all the XNF details in a single data store.
Yes.
Like, so this particular query will be translated into a search in the database.
Yep.
Which will have all the PNF details. But here it's a little different, I believe, in CPS, right?
It is a little different. Now, as for Swami asked that question earlier, can you query across network functions? And the answer would be yes. So, but now we need to get Tuan into the conversation for exactly how that query would look like. I know it should be possible that you can look for all of the network functions that have cell IDs, and then you could constrain it, all of the network functions that have cell IDs in a certain range.
Okay.
Or you could get properties from the network functions that have cell IDs in a certain range without actually ever understanding which network functions they came from. So it depends on exactly how you want to design your use case. And I guess that's why we're having this conversation, is to understand what is possible and what is not.
Yeah, Tony, that's good, actually. Yeah.
Okay. And maybe one point that strikes me, maybe Krishna, in OOF, we also do a query of getting the details for the entire network, right, Krishna? I think there is one API call, right, towards ConfigDB, where OOF would want to know the details of the PCI values of all the cells in the network.
Yes, Swami, I think.
And that should be possible as well.
Again, maybe I'm just getting into a next level of detail, Tony. Why I'm bringing up this point is, so there, in that such a case, right, there you could have different network function types, right? I mean, some could come from, I don't know, Ericsson, some could come from Nokia, some could come from a third vendor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how would that work? I'm just, at least it's not clear in my head, Tony.
Well, it depends on what you were looking for. And so if they all had the same concept and the same name, so if they were using a standard PCI value or neighbor relations list, if that was standardized, then the query would work across them, because you would just say, I don't care where they are in the hierarchy for that module, for that model, I just want these values back, and you would get them back. Now if Huawei decided to call their neighbor relations list the next door list, then you would have a problem. Then you would have to do some mapping. Then you would have to figure out in your mapper service, okay, for this target type, or your template would be tied, it would be the get neighbor list, but the target type in this case would need to be specified because the mapping would need to occur.
Right. Okay.
So it depends on whether or not the native models were homogeneous. If they weren't, then you wouldn't be able to do a homogeneous query across them. You would instead have to say, I want to execute get neighbor list with a wildcard for the target type.
Okay.
And then expect that the template would actually do the translation on the fly and return you the values that you were looking for. And I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, but those are the that would be my gut reaction or my initial plan for how to address the challenge you just presented me with.
Okay, no, I'm just thinking in terms of the way to handle such a situation, Tony, because it's a real one. I mean,
oh, I agree, it is.
You have such an example, so that's the reason. Okay, yeah, I get your point. So we could start off with a homogeneous set. That could be this thing, but we need to think at least, we need to just see what would be a practical way to get this result. Okay, will it work with a wildcard and then somebody figures out like via the template or some other means?
Yeah, in that case, the mapper service would say, okay, I can recognize that this is a special target type. It's a wildcard. So I will construct all the available composite keys. I will load all of the templates, and then I will sequentially or in parallel execute all of those templates against the XNF proxy, and then collate the results or paginate the results and send it back to the client.
Okay. Yeah, I think that sounds reasonable. Sorry, Krishna. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, for me. I think, so these are the existing APIs that we had. And I had some open points for that.
Have you moved on to slide 3?
Just a second. I am in slide number 5, I guess. Just a second.
Okay, it hadn't changed for us. Okay, we were still looking at slide 2.
Okay, just a minute. Let me stop sharing once.
Yeah, maybe 3 and 4 you can just quickly go over, Krishna, because we didn't see actually the change.
Okay, so what slide number 3 is, like, I modified the APIs based on the new composite key also. So the APIs will have both of them, like the template ID and also the schema target type. So this is one change. So this was the older slide, just I have kept it for reference. So these are the existing APIs. So as I said, right, the consumers in the previous way, we didn't have any means for the consumer to know the PNF actually.
Okay.
So some open points I had is in the current way, what we are looking at is only retrieving the data from the service. So like, how will the update happen? So that's one of the questions. So the mapper service will be used for that also, or will that be done in a different way?
Well, at the moment, the updates are done by SDNC. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes. SDNC will do that.
You could continue to have that being the case.
Okay.
But it is a process that is very similar to what is happening in the mapper.
Yeah, exactly. So even in the APIs, we had both some APIs for retrieving and also updating the existing ones. Like we have a put API which will update the neighbors. So
SLID,
So maybe we should have the similar process for updating also, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's very much up to you. I mean, the function, as if I was to take it as a black box, would be that it has to take a VES event off the DMAP, and it needs to update the XNF proxy, specifying what is the source and what is the the Yang data that needs to be updated, deleted, created. So that's its input, it's an output. So it's an input, it gets a VES event, and as an output, it invokes the XNF proxy, which will then store the data or update data. So that's very, very similar to what you called in the mapper, except that instead of an API being invoked by an application, it is pulling events off the DMAP as its input, and then it has to try and extract information from the VES event and then construct the API call. So it's similar, but not the same. And the responsibility today resides with the SDNC. It's up to you to decide where it should reside. And I guess that comes down to where you have impact.
Yeah, I think even in the use case, I think SDNC was the one who was using this API, I think. So
correct. So you can remove that code and put it somewhere else, or you can update the code in SDNC.
We could do that. Yeah, I think what I was mentioning specifically is, should the mapper service do the translation for that also, for creating and updating? So SDNC, should SDNC be using this mapper service or using the XNF proxy directly? So
it has to do some, I don't think it has to do any mapping, because I think that in the VES event is a Yang fragment that is compliant to the network function. I guess, Swami, you'd be able to tell us more about that.
Which one, Tony? I didn't get you.
So in the VES event with the CM notification, inside the VES event is an actual Yang document that complies with the VNF native model.
I don't think so, Tony.
I don't think that's the case, actually.
Yeah, I don't think so. I haven't looked at a real example, but I don't think that is the case.
So Marge, who is my coworker, she worked on the VES, the standard defined VES event, and it follows most of the structure of like other VES events too. There's a lot of data in the VES header that tells you where the thing is from, and then within the body, you could include a Yang fragment if you want to, but that's not how it's structured, as I understand it. So I can find the link for you again. One second here.
Yeah, we had some good information last week from both yourself and from Camel. So
yes.
That's the kind of mapping that has to occur, because the information that's required to update the XNF proxy is expected by the XNF proxy to be compliant to the XNF's native schema, its model.
So I'm putting in the chat, this is the VES event. This is the actual VES event model. And it's meant to be dynamic enough that it can serve for many different kind of purposes, not just CM. So again, if you look at section 1.2,
but specifically we're looking at the CM aspects.
Well, we are, but
because this is,
but how you specify a CM piece is in the namespace that you use, 3GPP configuration, and that's how you tell it that it's a CM thing. So
mm-hmm. So that's part of the function of this black box, is to understand what Ben has just said, and then to ensure that the information that's given over the API is compatible with the native model from the XNF. Did that make sense?
Yeah, Yeah, right, Tony. So right now that's the SDNR, but also there is also other kinds of updates that you would want to do, right? For example, maybe if ONAP wants to update some configuration, it might, I mean, I think currently it also does that via SDNR. Maybe for some of the YANG models, actually not part of the, let's say in the network YANG, right? So maybe certain things also that we call the config.db API today, but to be again using CPS, but via SDNR.
Yeah, yeah. The interface to the network function will continue to be SDNR. That's its job. It has to formulate the netconf requests and send them down to the network function. But the format of that XNF request, the actual body, is written in a way that the XNF is going to understand. So it's compliant to the XNF's own model. And that's what we expect to be stored in the CPS by the XNF proxy. So the XNF proxy is proxying the ownership of that data. I mean, obviously the network function owns the data, but the network function isn't part of ONAP. It's outside of ONAP. So we have the XNF proxy as the proxy owner within ONAP for that data. But it doesn't necessarily, in order to be generic, it can't have a detailed understanding of those relationships. It has to work at the language level in the same way that CPS does. Am I making sense, or do I need to clarify that one?
No, Tony. I think that's that's agreed.
So, I mean, there is a small price to pay for this generic. It means that something still has to do the interpretation that's outside of the generic code base.
Yes, I think we cannot avoid that as well, Tony.
No, you can't.
I mean, yeah, I don't think we can avoid that. And I think it's not needed to avoid that also, I think.
It's in fact essential that you shouldn't avoid it, because that's where the value comes in your software.
Yeah.
It's how you make something more tangible to humans. You can take some of the burden of understanding and put it in encoded in software, but the CPS is not doing that. It's doing it only at a language level, and the XNF proxy is doing it at a slightly higher level. It's saying, the XNF proxy also understands the concept of an XNF.
Right, right.
Okay.
Maybe Krishna, the next.
Go ahead, Krishna.
Yeah. So one other query is when we have the execute template API, should there be a get or a post request? Simply it could be a get request for retrieving, but if it's a simple query, it could be a get request, right? For example, I had specified some of the APIs here.
I'm going to defer to Neve on this one. Hopefully you're able to answer without Tuan, because I don't know the answer to this, but I know you guys have had a lot of conversations over the, and Aditya as well. There's enough on the team, I think, to be able to answer you guys spent a lot of effort on making sure that the REST interface looked exactly right and was consistent. So maybe if you guys take that one, I'll keep quiet.
Yeah, I think it would be okay to use a post and have the ID as a primary key. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So since if the query gets complex, if the input gets complex into a more of object-like thing, get may not be a suitable solution for that. Then we may have to pack it into a request body, but a get request does not support it. Maybe we may have to use the post there.
Yeah, we use posts, so yeah.
Then that should be good. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Neve. I wouldn't have known that.
Okay. So, and the final one is another thing I had is the result translation. So, this maybe we may have to look at when we have the examples, then we may be able to look further into it, I believe. Because
in the first pass, I think you should absolutely have it, Krishna, but it should be trivial in the first pass because you're only dealing at the moment with the simulated model, with the simulated function or network. So I think everything is based on the same model. So the transformation, this translation that you're talking about from the result set, is going to be trivial. But I do think you should make sure that it passes through a piece of software that can have a translation loaded into it. Because again, when you get to the heterogeneous, you will need it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's correct. Yeah.
Well, the PNF name and PNF ID are in the VES event. So, and that will, that's also stored in the ANAI schema as well and can serve as the index to the XNF. So it's just a matter of, you know, there's going to be logical records that represent the cell in ONAP. And
this is the functionality of the template, though. Once you've identified the template, so there'll be part of the template that will break the template down into one or more queries that can have some transient state as they're making multiple sequential queries against the XNF proxy or CPS. And then when the final result set comes back, they need to interpret that to potentially provide it in a standard way. And that's where the result translation comes back into play. So you're correct. You do need the composite key, Ben, the template name and the target type to, or schema set, to figure out exactly which template is going to be loaded. But within that template, you also need to have a piece for the, what do I do with the data that comes back?
So essentially you're saying the template will manage the ability to map between the XNF and the logical object.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You said it better than me. Thank you.
Fair enough. Also one thing on slide 2, I think it was, when I was looking at the mapping and I didn't want to interrupt your presentation, but one thing I was thinking was, you know, other domains, like we've mentioned other domains like transport and core and so forth, it occurs to me are also going to want a mapper service. And how do we make this a generic enough that it's kind of available to other things in ONAP? I think we want to, this is a very valuable service, and I don't think we want to develop it so that it's just tailored to, say, SON use case. I think we want to try to make this generic enough that other use cases or other potential, like, say, plugins could use this as well. Is that what you have in mind?
Yes, Ben. I think it should work for other templates too, I believe. Because, when you look at the template, it is going to be an XPath template, which is like specific to a young model. So I think so the entire thing is going to be specific to the young model. So if we bring up a new model for transport, then we should be able to create new templates for that also. So if we could do that, we could reuse that same place, I believe. That's it from me. So any other questions or anything we need to discuss on this part?
Not for me. I appreciate it. I thought I had an excellent conversation both last week and this week as a result. So I'm good. I have to leave in 4 minutes, unfortunately, of a hard stop. So if anybody has any questions for me before I leave, then otherwise I'll catch up on the recording.
Okay, Tony, just one last comment, maybe for the slicing and the SON use case in particular. I think maybe once Tuan is back from holidays, I think along with Sandeep and Krishna for the mapper service, I think we should continue the conversation so that we make progress with Honolulu.
Absolutely, yeah. 100% agree with that. I will make myself available as soon as I'm back. I'm back on the 4th, the Monday, the first Monday in January.
Okay.
So pop something, you have my email address, pop something in the calendar, and I will do my very best to engage in this process. I do want to see this as a success, yes.
Yeah.
Keep progress going.
Yeah,
I think we talked about the CPS team attending the slicing calls, right? So
on Monday.
So I think that was, we're looking to do that. And also, I assume this mapper service is also used by the slicing team as well as the SON team. Is that right? Is that the intention?
Yeah, Ben, that's right. And we had, I mean, Tony and Tuan joined this Monday's call. And we had like a intro call. And I think now the team is also aware of the concepts. Yeah, I think it will take some time for it to sink in.
Yes.
But yes, we have made progress, I would say.
Okay, great.
Okay, so if there's nothing else for me, I'm going to take leave, and I will talk to you all in the new year.
Yeah, happy holidays, Tony.
Happy holidays.
Have a good one.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Editing. Oh. Okay, I see you loaded the slides. Thanks, Krishna, for presentation. Yeah. I think we'll probably have more interaction, of course, as we move forward.
Yeah, sure, Ben.
Okay, and as mentioned, we'll probably have I think the CPS team also needs to probably attend or engage that slicing team and calls as well. That's on Monday, is the regular weekly call, right?
Right.
And what, and is it Thursday? Is it the ORAN sync with slicing? Is that on Wednesday or Thursday?
Yeah, it's on Thursday, Ben, but maybe that's not a good place for this discussion.
Okay.
I think Mondays might be better.
Okay.
Because there we'll focus mainly on the interaction with, the RAN, ORAN interfaces and from use cases point of view.
Okay.
I think Mondays is better. Otherwise, we could do it as part of the Friday CPS call.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, Fridays are also a good place to discuss this as well. But of course, we don't expect the whole slicing team to show up here. That's why I think, you know, people in CPS also need to be engaged, perhaps in the Monday calls as well. Yeah. Okay. So let me just see if there were open items from last couple meetings here. So we also talked about closing out R7 and R8. Let me just check the realization call. So the next realization calls are going to be in the new year are going to be on the intent framework and intent modeling, which I think are very interesting use cases. So there's two different teams that are going to be presenting there. So here we'll actually be discussing also the CPS. So last time, we met in December. We had a discussion about some of the CPS modeling. So that'll continue here, I think. So it would be probably good for people to attend the January 21 call at least, because we're discussing some of what Jacqueline was presenting during this call. And we actually also have an item on our agenda to also discuss, to continue that as well. But what's good here is that people from other use cases also attend this call. So it has more diversity maybe of people attending that call. So the 21st is definitely a good call to attend. And then there's another presentation from the modeling leads, and then Zoo giving a presentation on PNF software upgrade, and then CMPV2. And then eventually probably we should probably have a release thing for slicing and the SON. But let me see what the release dates here. For Honolulu, I know is a shorter release. So previous releases in Guilin and Frankfurt and so forth were 27 and a half weeks. And this is a 19 week cycle. So it's a much shorter cycle. And so just so people are aware that there's a shorter cycle going on here. And also they've sort of relabeled some of these M1, M2, MDrop things. So there used to be 4 MDrops and now there's only 3. And there wasn't, M1 wasn't called global requirements approved before. So global requirements is what they were calling the non-functional requirements. Those are now called global requirements. And the feature freeze is the old M4. So this is when we're expecting code to freeze and then go into the period of integration and testing. Also note that February 1 to February 4, there's a virtual DDF going on. This is no longer tentative. It's actually planned for February 1 to February 4. And Timo Perala has released some links to be able to propose topics into the VDDF. And I expect also this is when people will start talking about the Istanbul release as well. So there may be some technical introduction topics as well. And unlike the previous DDF we had, I believe it was in like June or maybe September. We had one like a few months ago. There was some themes there about release management and so forth. This I don't think is themed. So if you have a technical presentation or whatever you want to make, and possibly CPS may want to also make a presentation here as well, or just so you're aware, there's a VDDF coming up as well. Okay. You just put links here so that people get to it. I don't know, Niamh, did you have any updates on the issues and decisions? Were there any, let me see. Were there any updates here?
No, just for the logging issue that we discussed last week, the logging enhancement team, we contacted them and it doesn't seem like there's anyone working on it anymore. So we are going to put it on hold for now. And when we're later on in the backlog, when we discuss our deployment and stuff, we're going to discuss logging architecture. But for now, we're just printing to the console.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, last time you presented on the logging stuff. Okay, good. All right, and I do see a lot, some things went green actually as well. So in fact, there's only a few things that seem to be open. The upgrade of models to upgrade models, behavior of CPS, to be driven by a model, model discovery at runtime. Oh, this is the whole registry service concept, yep. And then discussion about DCA data exposure service, which Swami had told us about.
Yeah, so this was the one which Krishna presented, right, Ben? So I think this you can. The mapper service, right, is basically the one that we are talking about.
Oh, this is the mapper service. Is that right? Do I understand that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay. So let's see. If we have other open items here, we finished our architecture reviews and they were approved. So that was done a couple weeks ago. So that went well. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen or attend that, you can download the slides here. Okay, I think those are all our open topics. Do we have any other, let's see, things coming up here? Demo the week of TSC. This is probably could be deleted, I guess. Okay, so I don't know if. Yeah, we may need to. Let's see. We may need to have some discussion with some of these other teams as well at some point in the new year too. Okay. Okay, I don't think I really have any other topics to discuss. Is there anything from anybody that anybody wants to report on? Okay, hearing none, I guess we'll end the meeting a little early. So it's been a great working with everybody this year, and I wish everybody happy holidays. There will be no meeting next week. Let me write that down. So wishing everybody a happy holidays and stay safe and have a great weekend and see you in the new year. All right. Thank you everybody for attending.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.